Hello, and a warm welcome back to Braillecast, connecting the dots for Braillists everywhere. And coming up this time, we're learning more about the Tactile and Technology Literacy Centre, or TTLC. Here at the Braillists Foundation, we pride ourselves on being a grassroots organisation. That's to say, we're led by Braille users, for Braille users, and of course, by extension, generally led by blind people, for blind people. This isn't unique to the Braillists, of course. In the United States, they have the National Federation of the Blind and the American Council of the Blind. And in the UK, we have the Technology Association of Visually Impaired People, or TAVIP, and another organisation called VI Talk. But the fact that we're proud of our grassroots status suggests that even though there are grassroots organisations, they're not very common. And so when we found out about another grassroots organisation with a very similar mission to the Braillists Foundation, we thought we'd better catch up with them. The Tactile and Technology Literacy Centre, or TTLC, is based in Auckland, New Zealand, and was founded by three blind people in 2021. Chantelle Griffiths, who's very well known to the Braillists already, David Sivaratnam, and Anne Nulesa. I caught up with all three of them in the middle of June to find out more about the organisation. Sean, perhaps we'd start with you. Could you tell me what TTLC is, and maybe a bit about why you decided to set it up?
As you already mentioned, TTLC stands for the Tactile and Technology Literacy Centre. And we started it back in 2021, basically in response to a couple of different things. The first thing was because we noticed that in New Zealand anyway, the landscape for Braille and tactile learning and also assistive technology was changing or was about to change. And I thought to myself that it would be really nice one day to be able to do something a bit differently from a Braille and tactile user or learner's point of view, rather than an idea of what a bigger organization might suggest we want. Alongside that, at the same time, I found an email in my inbox one morning from a program that was offering an opportunity for people with disabilities to take part in an entrepreneurship type mastermind, where you learn about disability leadership, but you also learn about how to start a business. When I saw that, it clicked in my mind that actually this would be the perfect opportunity to begin exploring this idea of starting something up really from this Braille user's point of view and making it go with the support of an experienced team who know how to not only teach the disability leadership angle, but also the business angle from a disability point of view. So that's really how we started. We applied to the program. They let us take part as a team, which at the time was a little bit unusual. And we went through the program, we learned all the skills we needed in order to run a business. And then we decided that the road we wanted to go down was definitely the tactile production and teaching angle for Braille production and tactile graphics. We had a couple of different ideas at the time of how we wanted to do that, but we've ended up sticking with that with a view eventually to being able to touch on the assistive technology side. And of course, as with any business, it's taking a little while to set up and get going, and we're still learning things along the way. But that was our primary reason for starting it and setting it up in the first place.
And just to give us some context as to what you were talking about earlier on about Braille in New Zealand, I'm going to ask Anne and David in turn. You'd have both learnt Braille, I guess, before TTLC came into being. So perhaps one of you could start and just talk about what your journey was.
Before TTLC, me and David were students of Chantelle learning Braille. For the majority of my life, I was sighted. And at the age of 37, I lost my sight due to diabetic retinopathy. For me, it was a shocking change, and I was introduced to the Blind Foundation here in New Zealand and was offered a chance to learn Braille. And I wanted to learn Braille simply because I miss the feel of turning pages in a book. Also, I wanted to be an active participant in my church, because I attend the Samoan church and they do responsive reading of the Bible where the minister reads a verse and the congregation reads a verse and so forth and so forth. And so I wanted to participate, and the only way that I knew that I could do that is by learning Braille.
I was connected to or with Chantel through the foundation, and we were exploring a Braille refresher course. I have had training in Braille a number of years before that. My blindness journey began more than 10 years ago. It would be about 12 years now. And initially, I had gone through the processes of what I thought at the time would equip me for my new life as a blind person. However, Braille, though it was an exciting time to go through the process of learning it, and I enjoyed it tremendously, it lost its relevance to me at that time. And it was mainly due to the emergence of text-to-speech technology. And progressing through the years of learning that and using that to function in my day-to-day life and role, the Perkins just collected dust on my table. And I moved to New Zealand about 3 years after that. And the motivation to get back into that Braille refresher course was not so much with a perspective of, I want to learn Braille, I want to use Braille. I had no concept of that. It was mainly to be able to access music and to be able to read music and play music as I used to as a sighted person. And in the process of starting that course, I realized that Braille had a relevance now, and the power of being able to read and access information in that very personal, intimate, direct, transferable, referable mode. And there was a kind of an epiphany, I suppose, for me, where I began to see the power of a blind person having lost sight as an adult, being able to invest time, energy, all that mental faculty that's needed to not just learn Braille, but to learn to use Braille and read Braille in a manner that would be profitable and functional. Literacy to me is something very important. And I think it's because I've seen over the years how our society is becoming illiterate, moving away from the acquisition of information through reading and getting it from various other sources, audio, video, all the media that's out there today. It's not just a person who is blind who can't read. There are people who actually can see, who are quite capable of reading, who don't read today in society. And because we've got now this fabulous Braille code that enables us to be literate, and I use the word literacy in the literal sense of the word literacy here, if an adult has come to a stage in their life where they're not able to read, well, I think it's worth putting the investment there again, though it might seem hard, to come to a place where we can actually be able to read and verify what we are reading. So it was an 18-month journey in Braille. It's still going on because as an adult who's never been exposed to reading Braille, I realized or recognized that the tremendous need to have a support network in place for adults who have lost their vision so they can progress in their Braille learning and Braille usage so that they can actually start using it in a functional way in real life situations. And I suppose another thing that came foremost to my mind at that time was, as a blind person or person confronting vision loss, blindness as an adult, I personally took a lot of inspiration from observing and establishing those connections with peers who had gone through the same journey or who were in the same situation as myself. And we were not seeing this peer support network being fostered and encouraged. And we were losing the opportunities that were available to us to connect with and relate to and spend time with and be taught and instructed by peers. And we want to see members of our community being trained and becoming leaders and supporting each other.
And that idea of support comes back to the name, the Tactile and Technology Literacy Center, or TTLC, or possibly double TLC. I feel like there's probably a story behind that name.
It's quite nuanced. The way that we conceptualized it, there's a lot of layers to it. So the first important element there is tactile, because the way that we came together, our connection was built through the concept of tactile. In our case, it was Braille, but it's so much more nuanced than that, because tactile for a blind person doesn't just mean braille. It means being able to get information from your environment using the sense of touch. So really beginning to get to know your own sense of touch. Our perspective obviously is coming from the journey of an adult who is losing their vision or has, you know, is experiencing vision loss. So learning to get your information from your environment using your sense of touch is a really new concept to a lot of people. And it's often a really scary concept. So we wanted tactile to be first and foremost, because that's not only braille, but it's everything else as well. And using your sense of touch as a blind person is so integral to our experience and our ability to function in daily life that we felt that that was a really important first word. Technology, because it's not just about being able to use your tactile skills, but technology is also a really, really massive part of how we access the world now as blind people. So that's sort of the secondary thing. My background in particular is in assistive technology as well as braille. So the two really go hand in hand with me, especially when you begin to introduce the concept of braille displays and note takers and that refreshable braille technology. So that's not only technology, but it's also tactile technology. So you have the two T's. Literacy in a couple of different ways. So you've got the traditional definition of literacy, which is about being able to read, but then you've also got the notion of literacy as in a very deep knowledge of a subject. So for example, you could say you're computer literate. And then center, it was really interesting because we were developing this concept of TLC during COVID. And so what was happening during COVID was that people were separated. So we were locked down. Our initial vision was for an actual physical center, somewhere that people could go to experience the sense of touch and to learn tactile and technology skills. But that wasn't really possible in COVID. So it became almost like a center as in a hub, like a learning hub where people can come together for that community support, for that peer support, for that group learning experience that was so, so lacking during COVID. We had to pivot a lot of things overnight. And so center became a really central concept of bringing people together, creating that community, that sense of support. And so when you bring all that together, you've got tactile, you've got tactile technology, you've got technology, you've got the concept of literacy in both of its forms, we've got the center, and all together we create TLC, which in and of itself, we've got the traditional meaning of TLC, the abbreviation, tender loving care. But then we've got double. It's like over the top. The way that we see it is that we're not just providing services and support, but we're doing it well. We're doing it consciously. We're doing it in a way that nobody else is doing it. So therefore, we get the concept of TLC. And TLC, we've also determined, can stand for things like tactile learning community. So there's a lot of things that we associate with the name TLC. We pronounce it deliberately that way, even though our speech technology doesn't always do that. And that's the reason why.
What are the current projects of TLC at the moment?
We are just really in our infancy. So we're still sort of finding our feet. But we were really fortunate last year to receive some funding from the Ministry of Culture and Heritage from something called the COVID Regeneration Fund. So our first project out the gate has been so far to be working on a braille music curriculum. Started off as a localized one here in New Zealand, but we've discovered that actually there's a lot of international interest in what we're doing as well, which is so exciting. I did a pilot program, which included David and Anne, where we learnt braille alongside learning braille music. And so it was really quite fitting and quite timely that we actually got funding for this particular project. We've got a couple of side projects relating to different aspects of technology, such as developing curriculums for things like MuseScore and how that works. We're also just doing some side sort of contracting for people, but at the moment our main big focus is the braille music curriculum.
All right, so this is fascinating. I mean, I was at two conferences where it was presented, and it definitely did go down really well. And it definitely represents a new way of teaching, not just braille music, but music in general. The title of the paper at ICEB was Braille Music Our Way. I wonder if it's worth just spending some time on this and sort of really expanding what it is that Braille Music for Us and the Aotearoa Braille Music Initiative is trying to do. What makes it different from a traditional braille music course?
One of the things that was really important to us was that we taught music and music literacy concepts through Braille. So we're not teaching people to decode based on print music, but that meant that we had to really think about how are things normally done? What are the approaches out there? And we wanted to make sure that this complemented those approaches, but in a way that meant that we were thinking from a Braille first perspective. So we would, for example, introduce music symbols instead of going from the start and introducing it very theoretically from a code-based perspective. We would make sure that the people coming through the program really understood the fundamental sort of building blocks of music first. So with rhythm and tonality being two at the forefront. And then once Braille is introduced to that, it's just a representation of that inner cognition, that inner learning that people have. And when we introduce the Braille music part of the curriculum, we introduce it in a way that means that we're encouraging those tactile skills that people are learning in other areas with us or in their own Braille journeys, so that when you are coming to the music part of it, you're able to recognize symbols in a way that means there's less confusion. The way that Braille music is taught at the moment can sometimes be a little bit confusing for people who are coming in and learning literary Braille at the same time. So we've made a really conscious effort to ensure that the way that we teach it is very clear from that Braille first perspective.
And it's about, first of all, not teaching people based on print concepts. You're teaching Braille first. So we're going straight into octave signs. We're not worrying about clefs and staves and trying to convert that. The other half of it is coming at it from a music first perspective, insofar as we're not looking at it and going, oh, well, this is a C, but it's written as a literary D. We're looking at it as a code in its own right, and really teaching people to read it as music rather than reading it as Braille, or that's what you're teaching them to do.
Yes, we're not coming at it from the point of view where someone has to decode. So it's like, oh, yeah, so this means one thing in literary Braille, but actually in music it means this.
From the point of view of a print syllabus, and I'm thinking what I've read and I've heard others speak on, as I'm not an expert on a Braille music curriculum, is that a lot of the Braille music curriculums, print music curriculums, which just have been transferred into Braille music curriculums, whereas this is totally steering away from that concept. But the other part that's really wonderful about the course is it focuses on what we call audiation and to think in music. And that's really a powerful tool because it's like learning to speak before you learn to read.
And it's interesting to talk to you about this, David, because you were a musician, I think, before you lost your sight, and obviously still are a musician. So I'm interested to know, from your point of view, you would have already had a lot of that theory knowledge in your head from having learned print music and then had to transition that across to Braille music. But having started to use the double TLC curriculum, has that drawn out anything in you that you hadn't sort of previously realized?
So with my blindness journey and my music journey, which I suppose went along together, as a sighted musician able to read music, I was very much fixed on the notes and reading the notes. But the ability to listen and play by ear, or the ability to improvise and play things impromptu, was missing in my repertoire ability. Until I moved away from the reliance on print music and had to use whatever skills, knowledge I had acquired in learning an instrument, learning all the theory, as you say, and the technique, to apply that in a setting where there was no representation of music. You had to listen to it, and either you had to imitate it or you had to pick it up and then later on find a way to make sense of that, and then you could improvise over it. And I suppose the journey of losing sight, not being able to access music, honed those skills for myself. But there came a point when I needed to be able to reproduce something that was very specific and to be able to read music. And Braille music simplified everything for me because now I don't need to work out all these notes. I've got it in front of me. And being able to read it also helped me to memorize it. And the retention of that memory also remained for a longer period of time. The process of learning with other members of the community who are also blind in the way they or we experience music has enriched my experience and understanding and even my learning and awareness of music. And what increasingly has come to the surface is that print music is just a representation of something abstract and even you could say spiritual to some degree. And you can write a piece of music in multiple ways. You can use all kinds of codes and ways of writing it, but in the end, it can all sound the same. The concept of assigning some code to music and realizing that these are just codes which we have placed, whether it's a print reader or a braille reader, to music has, I suppose, liberated my thinking about music and to feel like we don't need to get stuck on representation. Representation is great because we need representation. We need a code if we're going to transfer the knowledge of something to somebody else in the future, but it's just a means to an end.
And we haven't heard from you in a while. You've been very quiet. What's your involvement in the Braille Music for Us program?
Learning music Braille has been difficult for me because I had to get rid of the fact that I wasn't seeing music and that I was pretty much just looking at a linear line. And so for me, I couldn't move with going across the line, whereas when I looked at print music, I could see the notes going up the scale and down the scale. And so what's great about this curriculum is that the music that I feel within my body, I can feel it first within my body. And then when I put my fingers to the page, I can feel it. And then it makes sense to me that I can then move with the music while my hands go across the page.
Yeah, because there's a movement element too, isn't there? And this isn't something that we've really touched on. Did you want to elaborate on that a bit more?
So what we attempt to do with this curriculum in introducing music literacy through Braille, we make it a very holistic whole body experience. And that's just another way of being able to internalize the concepts of music. We found that it's actually a really powerful learning tool for blind musicians and blind people learning how to read Braille and Braille music. One of the connections that I made while we were developing the curriculum is that in order to read Braille properly, you need to be moving your hands across. So as part of this curriculum, one of the things that we found was really valuable was connecting the learning of the music with movement itself. So we've developed a series of body movements and hand placement that allows you to feel, in quotes, the music in a different way. So you learn music holistically. So it's not just about learning what the notes are theoretically. It's not just about learning the Braille music code. It's about learning how to audiate, how to think in music, how to feel the music in different ways. So you might feel different notes in your body as you're singing. You might experience music by moving at the same time. You might experience it differently when you're using different body or hand positions. But then all of that transfers over to when you begin to apply those tactile concepts that we talked about. So being able to move across the page and then being able to understand exactly what you're feeling and then expressing that in the music performance. So the Braille music becomes part of that tactile experience. So the movement connects the two in my mind. So it connects the inner understanding with the outer then application of it, because when you're a musician, you're not static. So whether you're playing an instrument or whether you're singing, you're moving. So to me, it makes sense to connect that through the learning of Braille and through the moving of your hands across the page.
This sounds like a very personal curriculum, and perhaps curriculum is not entirely the right word. I wonder if framework is perhaps a better word, because my experience of Braille music courses is that they've been very regimented, as indeed of all Braille courses, really. You have a workbook or several workbooks, and you must start at lesson one, and you must go all the way through all the exercises in lesson one, and then all the exercises in lesson two, and keep going until you reach lesson 20. And once you've got to lesson 20, you know all of Braille music. I feel like the TLC deliverables, for lack of a better word, might be slightly different to that.
You're right. It is a framework that gives us the flexibility to apply the knowledge and the things that we're teaching across a range of different situations. So For example, as you mentioned, someone who's learning Braille music from scratch and learning music concepts from scratch would start with a very basic beginner level understanding of how music works. So we would spend a lot of time making sure that that person was really comfortable with the concepts of music. And then we would go at the person's own pace when we begin to introduce Braille music into the mix. They may also be learning Braille alongside this, so they may be already learning contracted Braille or have just finished learning contracted Braille. So we take that very much into account when we are working with a person. It's one tool of a person's musical experience. So one of the other things that we are incorporating is some way of encouraging people to use the practical skills that they're learning within perhaps a group setting or an individual setting. So they can maybe learn an instrument, or they can sing together in a choir of other vision impaired people who are learning the same concepts as them. So they've got opportunities to explore music across a wider field of experience. For example, for someone like David, some of those beginner level music concepts he already knew, he'd already internalized that knowledge. So for a more experienced musician, what you might do is you might introduce the framework as a whole, introduce Braille music concepts a lot earlier in the journey because they've already got the understanding of how music works. And then you begin to connect what they already know into a Braille context.
Just to comment on something you said, Matthew, about the regimented music courses that you went through and the theory that is introduced in those courses, a lot of people understand the theory of music, not in terms of something they could explain, but they know what works and they know what progressions and what chords go with what, and they can intuitively do it. Braille music for us, or Braille music our way, or Braille music for you, focuses initially on music in a very holistic way, where it's something that has been in society for eons, even before music was represented. And it focuses on teaching or helping people to acquire that ability and that skill. And then later you would bring in the theory and the explanation. And having worked with a lot of sighted children, some of these concepts that we employ in this particular curriculum, especially the concepts of movement when teaching rhythm, and even movement when teaching tonality, has had a profound effect on even sighted children and enabling them to grasp these concepts much quicker than they would have if I just said, oh, here are the notes, and this is the scale that you see on your page, and this is how it goes, and these are the tones, and these are the semitones. Yes, we can teach that. They've got the knowledge in their head, but they haven't got the awareness in their body. I believe it's a better approach. The thing that it's difficult to sort of come to terms with for a person who's learned traditionally is it's very hard to put levels in the traditional way on this kind of learning. You go from grade 1 to grade 8 and further when you learn the traditional way, and you have this sense of I've achieved this amount of ability because I've gone from this grade to this grade. Whereas in this system, it's a lot more holistic. And you can't attach the same labeling system and say you have gone from this grade to this grade, but it does have its own unique system of acquisition, because we go from very simple tonal and rhythmic patterns to more complex. And it gives a person the tools, not just in terms of being able to read music, but even the awareness of music, to take this and to apply it into any setting. Like, for example, if a person might want to progress in the learning of an instrument or go further in the learning of more music literacy. So it's not a syllabus for a particular instrument, but it's a curriculum that introduces and builds on music.
Developing things from a blind first perspective, from a Braille first perspective, goes all the way through the philosophy of the curriculum and the resources, and even as far as things like the front covers on the books. They have tactile diagrams on the front covers of the books. And I'd quite like to bring Anne back in at this point. I get the impression that you're quite a creative person. When you sort of first saw tactile diagrams, what was it that stuck out at you in terms of how busy they were or how busy they weren't, or how uncluttered they needed to be in order for a blind person to be able to make sense of them?
It meant more to me that I could feel a picture. I recently just got some music embossed, and the front cover had two quavers on it as a tactile diagram. That was kind of special to me because not only could I feel it, but I could see it in my mind.
Yeah, and I guess that works because the design of tactile diagrams is quite intentional. And so those two quavers were just two quavers. There was no clutter around those two quavers. Perhaps I could bring Chantel back in at this point just to talk briefly about the design of the covers, because it's not something I've ever seen before. You know, to me, the front cover just has a print label on it and then has a braille label down the spine. And so having tactile diagrams on front covers is really quite interesting. How much attention do you pay to that sort of thing?
It is something very intentional. We pay a lot of attention to every aspect of the tactile elements of everything that we do. So not just for the curriculum. We've got front cover designs for a number of different things. So we sit down and we think about what we're trying to convey through tactile. So you mentioned the fact that there is no clutter. There is just an intentional symbol or set of symbols. That's very much the case with the curriculum. So we thought really carefully about what books we are going to include in the curriculum. So for example, we've got a series of three notes for the tutor guidebook, two notes for the learner workbook. And we've also got a treble clef, which is kind of like the guidance book for the whole document, because the treble clef in print, it tells you whereabouts you begin to play the piece. But it's also a really cool diagram to feel. So it also means that people are getting that tactile experience right from the get-go. It draws people in, and the feedback that we've got so far is that it's actually a really powerful tool. So it's something that people can trace. It's something that people can learn to begin to get that information from the environment. We also include an element of print lettering as well. So we've got the braille title. We've got a symbol generally that tells you what the book is, so that even if you're not a particularly fast braille reader, you can pick up your different books and you can tell immediately, this is a music book, or this is a workbook, or this is a novel. And then you've also got an element of print, because for a lot of people that connects the visual sense that they may have once had, and it provides that really tactile connection that says, okay, well, the connection to print that I once had is still valid, is still there, and I'm still able to explore it. But now I'm exploring it with my hands. So it's very intentional in order to connect a whole bunch of different aspects of people's experience and people's learning.
Staying with that outside in approach, and possibly moving even further outside and away from braille music and just towards the holistic nature of tactile literacy, Chantel, you've done a masterclass for the Braillists in the past, and I'm sure you'll do more on improving reading speed. And you talk about things like reset objects and really interesting concepts that we've not really come across in the UK. And the other thing that you talked to me about, which hasn't had a great deal of exposure, and I just wanted to give it some, is this idea of when you first encounter a blind person who needs to learn tactile literacy, this idea of a tactile assessment. I wonder if you wanted to just talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, it comes back to this concept that we talked about, that what we're trying to do needs to come from the perspective of the person that we're trying to help. So one of the things that we've done in designing our offerings is to create I don't like to call it an assessment tool because it isn't, but basically a way to figure out how best to help a person. And the way that we could have done that, the way that a lot of places do, is they get people to either fill out a form or they go through a questionnaire, and it's very functional. So can you see this? What can you currently do with your vision? How do you currently experience your environment? They take it from a very clinical perspective. What we do is we have a conversation with a person when they meet with us for the first time, and we help them to explore in their own words and in their own way their sense of touch. So we might ask them questions about their experience of their sense of touch, what they think their sense of touch is, how connected they feel with their sense of touch. And it sounds a little bit new, a little bit different, but what ends up happening is we get a better understanding of how the person feels about their sense of touch, which means that we can design offerings for that person that really come from their perspective. So it's not merely a tick box exercise. The way that we've designed it is really intentional, because we know that learning about your sense of touch and other aspects of your blindness journey is different for everybody. So you can't get that sort of information from just ticking various boxes on a form. You've really got to explore it in a way that helps the person to tell you where they're at in their own words and in their own way. So our first conversation that we have is very intentionally designed to guide people through a journey from discovering actually what their sense of touch is, how it affects their lives, what they can do with it, and then where they want to go with it. And within that experience and that conversation, we actually give them some objects to experience. So they can either choose their own object or we can choose it for them. And based on their feedback from going through that conversation and exploring those objects, we can then have a really solid and very detailed, actually very deep understanding of how we can best assist them going forward and tailor our approach to suit.
What we found when we had the opportunity to use the particular tool that Chantel was speaking about was not just that we used it as a tool to ascertain a person's awareness, I suppose, of their tactile sense, but what we found was that most of the people who underwent that process, they experienced a sense of discovery and awareness, which they didn't know that they had. And the feedback we received was they were amazed to find that they've got the sense of touch, which they hadn't appreciated as much as they had through that experience, and an awareness of that sense of touch, which was keenly brought out through the process. So the person ended up leaving the process with a sense of, I've discovered something today about myself, and I've got this amazing sense of touch, which I've appreciated, I've used in other situations, but I can use the sense of touch more in my life. And even an awareness of how they have been using their sense of touch in a sightless capacity. And there's so many things which even a sighted person does using their sense of touch and not using their sight or their hearing, and an appreciation of the possibility of what more can we explore.
People came away from it not only knowing the possibilities of what they can achieve, but actually really, really excited to start the journey. Often when we bring people into a situation where they've got to learn a skill for the first time, there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of nervousness, there's a lot of trepidation because it's new. And for people who have lost their sight later in life, it's really, really scary. So what this process does is it actually really focuses in not on the process of learning a new skill, but it focuses on helping people to discover within themselves what they are already doing and already capable of, drawing their attention to skills and knowledge they already have, and then drawing it out in such a way that it inspires them to learn more and to discover more and to engage in a way that they otherwise wouldn't. So when people go through this process, they're really focused, they're really engaged, and they're really excited. So generally when we bring people in to do a Braille course, they're keen and they're committed and they're 100% there for their own reasons. And if they're not, if they realize during that first discussion that actually they're not there for their own reasons, they know that, they can articulate that, and then they can make more informed choices as well about how they proceed. It's on their terms. And that's a big thing for us, is making sure that people are coming to us wanting to learn, wanting to be there, and doing it completely on their own terms. And that's one way that we help them to discover where they currently are, where they want to be, and to make sure that actually it's their choice to be here.
Some people may call it an assessment, but what it really is a exploration of what they feel. It's not a test. There are no right answers. There are no wrong answers. It's just what you feel, and exploring pathways of where you can take your sense of touch and exploring ways forward.
Turning our attention back to the business side of Double TLC for a moment, you talked earlier on in the interview about how you were funded currently by the Ministry of Culture. Presumably that funding is not indefinite and you're going to need to find ways of staying self-sustaining. And you've clearly got some really talented people to produce the resources, and you've got the equipment to produce the resources. So have you ever thought about perhaps putting those to use in terms of more conventional Braille transcription services and things like that?
Absolutely. One of the things that we want to do is to increase our ability to do regular Braille transcription. Of course, a big focus of ours is doing Braille music. That is an area of specialization. There aren't all that many people that can transcribe Braille music here in New Zealand. So part of what we are building into our thinking is to train people up, blind transcribers and sighted transcribers alike, to specialize in braille music, but also to use their skills to do braille transcription. So definitely it's one thing that we're exploring. We've already had quite a few inquiries from corporate organizations and people who are looking for documents and things for themselves. And so we would really like to build that up and make that a much bigger part of what we're offering, and perhaps expanding into areas of 3D printing and using UV printing technology for that more tactile graphics and 3D experience as well.
And presumably there are other channels as well for bringing in income. I'm thinking of, in the UK, we would call it assistive technology training. Corporate training can bring in a fair odd amount of money. I don't know what the market's like in New Zealand, but that presumably is another avenue that you could explore.
Absolutely. And that's part of the technology part. It's also a speciality of ours, being able to do that technology training. And we are gradually building up those relationships from a WTLC point of view. We have them through other avenues, but from WTLC, because we're so new, we're taking the time to really build those robust relationships with corporates, with other disability related organizations, so that when we're able to, when we have capacity, we can expand into that area as well.
Well, this has been a really fabulous conversation. Thank you to all three of you for taking the time out to spend some time here today. In closing, where can people go if they want to find out more, or if they want to get in touch and continue the conversation in their own right?
The best way to find us is probably at this stage to send us an email, requests@ttlc.nz. There is also a website. We're still working on building up the content for the website, but ttlc.nz is the website address as well.
Anne and David and Chantelle, thank you very much.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Braillecast, the official podcast of the Braillists Foundation. You can find more Braille-related content by subscribing to Braillecast, all one word, in your podcast client of choice. Or listening to Braillecast, connecting the dots for Braillists everywhere on your smart speaker. You can also find past episodes on our website at braillecast.com. If you have comments on the podcast or suggestions of topics or guests for future episodes, we'd love to hear from you. Please email help@braillists.org. You can also find the Braillists on Twitter @Braillists or on Facebook, facebook.com/Braillists Foundation. Finally, if you like what you've heard, spread the word. New listeners are always welcome. So if you know other people who are interested in Braille, please tell them where to find us. In the meantime, on behalf of everyone at the Braillists, thanks for listening and bye for now. The costs of producing this episode were defrayed by a resilience grant from the Social Impact Fund of the Vision Foundation and Fight for Sight. For more information, visit visionfoundation.org.uk.